I'd like to call the Planning Commission meeting Tuesday, September 15th to order. Could I get a roll call, please?
Commissioner Martin?
Here.
Chair George?
Here.
And Commissioner Fowler Payne and Mack are absent.
And if we could stand and follow Commissioner Martin in the flag salute.
Please stand and join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll move on to agenda review. Does the commission wish to review, revise any agenda items?
No changes.
Seeing none, we'll move to community comments. Is there any member of the public that would like to address the commission tonight regarding items not on tonight's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on to written communications. Looks like we received two additional memos and an email correspondence, is that correct?
That's correct.
We'll move on to consent agenda, the approval of minutes for September 1st, and we'll have to continue that one. We don't have a quorum.
That's correct, Chair George.
So the meeting minutes for September 1st, 2015 will be continued to our next meeting, most likely. And we'll move on to public hearings. 8A, the consideration of conditional use permit case number 15-003, the construction of a 1,000 square foot secondary dwelling unit and construction of a 1,980 square foot garage with a 1,512 square foot second story storage area above. The location is 230 South Rena Street, and the applicant is Stephen and Donna Hobbs. And the representative is Jerry Shaw. Can I please have a staff report?
Thank you, Chair George, members of the commission. This is item 8A. The project location is zoned multifamily. Surrounding land uses include single-family residential, multifamily residential, and office. As you can see, it's located at the corner of South Rena Street and Dodson Way. The proposed project, as you mentioned, is the proposal to construct a new 1,000 square foot secondary dwelling unit. Typically, these secondary dwelling units are ministerial. However, in this case, meaning as long as you meet the code requirements, you get a building permit for it. In this case, there's a few reasons why there's a conditional use permit in front of you. The first one is for the multifamily zoning district, the maximum size of a secondary dwelling unit is either 1,200 square feet or 50% of the main residence, whichever is less. In this case, the main residence on this property is about 1,150 square feet, which would result in 575 square foot secondary dwelling unit. So the proposal to build a 1,000 square foot secondary dwelling unit is outside of the norm. Additionally, the secondary dwelling units are required to be serviced by the same driveway as the main residence. However, in this case, the applicant's proposing to utilize separate driveways. And it's because of these two deviations from the code that a conditional use permit is required per the development code. Additionally, as part of the project, the applicant's proposing to construct a 1,980 square foot RV garage with approximately 1,500 square feet of second-story storage area. This second-story storage area will have a separate exterior access than the secondary dwelling unit. The new structure in total will have a maximum height of 30 feet, which is consistent with the municipal code standard for building height. And it should be noted that the project does meet all other development standards as outlined per the code. So here's the project as proposed. This area right here is the existing residence, labeled as Unit A. There is an existing garage on site as well that takes access from Dodson Way. The applicant's proposing as part of the project to basically resurface the existing garage and reorient the entrance from Dodson Way with the very short driveway to South Rena Street. This does allow better vehicular access and parking for that primary structure. The new structure in the back would take access from, the secondary dwelling unit would take access from an existing asphalt driveway up on the north end of the property. It includes a carport on the lower level with the secondary dwelling unit set above, and it's a three-bedroom secondary dwelling unit. The code requires one on-site parking space per bedroom up to a maximum of two. That's why there's two parking spaces and not three. And then the furthest west portion of the of this new structure is the RV garage, which does take additional access from Dodson Way. So here's looking at the project. This upper view is if you were standing on Dodson Way looking at the subject property. This front area is the existing garage, which again, the orientation will be shifted from Dodson to Rena. Behind it, you can kind of see the outline of the main structure with the front porch and a little portion of the rear. However, here's the new structure. The secondary dwelling unit, again, will sit above the carport area and will have a separate exterior access than the upper story storage area with the RV garage down below. This lower left image is from the east elevation if you were looking at the new if you were standing essentially right here looking west. It shows the carport area with the secondary dwelling unit above and then the garage and storage area beyond that. This is the north elevation, which shows the windows into the secondary dwelling unit, the RV parking or the carport parking area, as well as the RV garage and second story storage area. And then this is looking at it from the west elevation with an access into the RV garage. In terms of advisory committee reviews, the staff advisory committee did review this project on August 26th. Members of the SAC were in support of the project as meeting the code and did provide conditions of approval, which are included in your resolution. The ARC also reviewed the project on August 31st. Members of the ARC were in support of the project. And staff must admit to an error in the staff report that says their conditions of approval were included in the resolution. They were not. So we've added those here, and they're on the supplemental memo in front of you. And so if the Planning Commission does move down a path of approval, staff would recommend that you add three additional conditions for the ARC, which would include that the applicant shall add second-story windows on the west and north elevations of the new structure. Number two, that the applicant shall have the option to add some stone to the main residence or utilize the hardy plank, the lap siding hardy plank, on the new structure instead of stone to make them more architecturally compatible with each other. And third, lastly, the applicant shall add trees or shrubs on the west side of the garage to help scale down the structure's architecture. With regard to environmental review, staff did review the project in accordance with CEQA and found it to be categorically exempt per section 15332 of the CEQA guidelines regarding infill development projects. With regard to public notice, staff mailed out public hearing notices to all property owners within 300 feet of the site. We also posted a public hearing notice in the Tribune, at City Hall, and on the city's website on September 4th. The applicant also posted a project notice sign at the site as well. Tonight's agenda and staff report were both posted at City Hall and on the city's website on September 11th. Staff has received several comments from neighboring property owners on this project. One of them is included with the main staff report, and others are included in the supplemental. Most of these comments are regarding the proposed project and center around the height and mass of the new structure. In light of this, staff did outline an alternative for you, that the alternative would be to limit the height of the garage portion of the new structure to 14 feet, consistent with the accessory structure height limitations. Now, the reason that this isn't outlined method just recommended for you tonight as an alternative is due to the fact that the secondary dwelling unit itself, the secondary dwelling unit structure, is not considered an accessory structure. And because it is attached to the new garage structure under the building code, it would be considered one structure. However, it is an alternative that staff wanted to highlight for you in case the Planning Commission felt that the massing of the structure was not consistent with the remainder of the neighborhood. And with that, staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution as attached, with the additional conditions of approval as recommended by the Architectural Review Committee. And I would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Sorry, Commissioner Martin, do you have any questions?
I have no questions as staff at this time. Thank you.
Commissioner King?
Just a quick one, Matt, on the supplemental that you sent out. Excuse me, that you handed out a few minutes ago. It talks about adding second story windows on the west and north elevations. Are those windows, did they ask where they should be located, either in the storage area or in the RV area?
The ARC did recommended if you were going to add windows to the lower floor area, put them higher above the typical fence line. That way they at least provide some relief to what can be seen beyond a fence. And to add them to the second story as well.
Thank you.
Excuse me, I do have a question, I'm sorry. Going back and looking at my notes. This hopefully is fairly quick and fairly easy. And looking at the large drawings, it looks to me that as a point of reference, in front of the large new RV garage, it looks like there's 10 feet from the face of the garage to the property line, and then there's another 9 feet, so there's going to be like a parkway area and then a new city sidewalk that is proposed as part of this project. So am I to believe that part of this parkway area and driveway skirting is actually in the public right-of-way and not on their property?
That is correct, yes.
And so I guess one of my questions is, where does that street currently kind of end? I know it's really kind of rough, but there's from the existing garage that's there, you can see ice plant, and there's this little single, driveway that's there. About how far out does that current ice plant landscaping go? Does that stop at the property line and then it's kind of dirt and asphalt into the street? Or does that ice plant currently exist into that, parkway public, area? But I'm wondering how much street we're losing when we put a sidewalk out there.
The proposed sidewalk location and curb line is generally in the same spot as it is right now. So we'll add public improvements to the both the front and side of the new development. We're not losing any street that we have right now. We're just improving it for public access.
Yeah, but right now there's no sidewalk there at all. What we have is, I'm going to call it ice plant. That may not be 100% accurate, but there's ice plant, low landscaping of some kind. And then my impression, understanding, there's no sidewalk there along Dotson. It just is kind of a part of the asphalt street, and I don't know how far out that sidewalk is going to.
And actually, if you look at the main plan, you'll see a dimension of approximately 9 feet
right
from right away coming to the face of curb, and that's pretty standard. Most of the right-of-way usually ends at back of sidewalk. We have a it looks like is this a detached sidewalk situation, and so that would provide for a 4 foot area for detached and a 5 foot area for the sidewalk area. So this is very, very standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not unhappy that it's not standard, but I'm just when you go out there and look at it now, the street looks kind of wide. And my thinking is, once all these improvements are in, it's going to look narrower. And in one of the letters, they talked about, gee, there's only 10 feet in front of that garage to provide access, you know, area for any kind of RV that's coming in. What I look at it from the curb to the face of the garage is really 19 feet. So there really is quite a bit more feet between the curb and the street and the face of the garage. So I'm just trying to get visualize how far out into that current asphalt street is this new sidewalk going to be.
Right, right. So if you look at the dimension on the cover sheet, you'll see a dimension of 10 foot 4 inch to the face of the garage, and then you'll see another dimension of 9 feet from the property line into the face of curb. So adding those together, that's generally about 19 feet to the face of curb. Obviously, we want to have a vehicle parked over the sidewalk area, but generally that's a space for a smaller vehicle to park in the driveway.
That's good. It still doesn't answer my question. Right now, let's go to the existing garage. It's probably easier to kind of visualize. From the existing garage, there is currently landscaped area and a small little single deteriorating driveway.
Correct.
into the streetscape.
Yeah, about 13 and a half feet.
It's currently about 13 feet.
To the asphalt curb face.
Okay, so that's probably about to where the inside edge of the new sidewalk is going to be. So the sidewalk in reality is going to shrink or narrow that street by about 4 feet. I'm just trying to visualize what it's going to look like and where it is between what's currently there and that improved sidewalk, how that's going to impact the width of that street.
The face of curb is 17 feet from the center of the street, from the physical center of the street.
Right. But my question really is, how far away is that from the edge of that garage? And you're saying that the existing landscape stuff that's there now is about 13 plus feet from that structure. I mean, that's fine. I'm not going to try to rearrange and rebuild this street or anything. I'm just trying to get an idea of, you know.
Yeah, I think the street will be widened by the applicant or improvements put in by the applicant in accordance with city standards for that roadway and the lane width and on-street parking and that sort of thing. So, okay.
All right. Thank you.
I have a few questions for staff. On page 3, the development standard, there's a table, development standard required and proposed. And this table is listed underneath the project meets development standard that's outlined below. I'm looking at the minimum front yard setback if required is 20 feet, and it says the proposed is 19. So how does that meet the development standards? Wouldn't it be shy a foot?
So what we consider that is a legally non-conforming structure. Essentially, the front yard, when the structure was built, it was built to whatever setback was in place at that time. The city, as we go through rezonings and change property development standards to front setbacks of 20 feet, some structures do fall into a non-conforming status. The legally non-conforming structures are allowed to remain, and they can be maintained, they can be modified. However, any additions must meet the current setback standard. So if they were going to, let's say, add on to the main structure anywhere, it would have to meet that 20-foot setback requirement measured from marina.
Okay, thank you. And the maximum lot coverage, is the maximum lot coverage 150 square feet? It says 40%. I'm just, it's Exhibit A, page 5, if that helps.
So the current proposal as it stands, the lot coverage is at 41%. In order to ensure that the applicant doesn't need to file a variance or anything like that, it was a condition that be reduced by 150 square feet to bring it down to 40% to in accordance with the code.
Okay, so reduce it 150. Okay, sorry, I misread that. I have a general question, I guess, regarding the master plan. I know every time a building project comes up, we discuss water. And the answer has typically been these developments have been accounted for in the master plan, therefore water allocation has been considered. So since we're requesting a larger unit than what is normally allowed, is the water consideration part of that as well?
You're right. So as we do the general plan land use designations, we do look, and any water system master plans updates, we do look at water demands based on averages for the different land use zonings and maximum intense uses on each individual site. For the specific site itself, if you were actually to do the development code and general plan allowed nine dwelling units per acre, you would get 2.03 dwelling units or 2.3 dwelling units, something to that effect. So in essence, this property could have two dwelling units on it. In the multifamily zone, the housing type for multifamily dwellings would be attached units. The applicant didn't want to attach the units, and so therefore detaching it and doing secondary dwelling unit was an option. However, because it was larger than the code would allow under secondary dwelling unit, he did have to process a conditional use permit. So it's not necessarily asking for an increased density there, because if they were attached units, they could have a secondary unit on that property.
Okay, so the water issue has been addressed, and
yes,
we're good there. I just know that that's going to be brought up tonight, and I thought we should just address it now. I have a question with the ARC meeting. Do we have notes, minutes on that? I know, I'm sorry, I didn't.
They should be attachment one of your staff report. They are in draft.
I'm just wondering if they addressed in discussions at all the height, because I didn't see it. I read the minutes, but I didn't see anything regarding the height, so I wasn't sure if it was addressed and not put into the minutes, or if it wasn't addressed at all.
It was addressed. These are action minutes,
right,
given staff limitations and that sort of thing. So they are expanded action minutes. We do try and include a little bit more than just your standard, here's the action taken. They did discuss the height. The property being in the multifamily zone, it is a zone of transition from commercial to less intense single-family residential development. So again, they looked at it and said, you know, it is a large structure. There are several other large structures in the vicinity, and therefore the ARC felt it was a good fit for the site and for that district and the neighborhood. And again, it does meet the development code for the 30-foot height limitation. However, there is the alternative as staff outlined.
Thank you, Matt. Those are my questions. We move on to the applicant. Is the applicant here? Wish to speak? Do you wish to address the commission? No? No? No.
Jerry, would you like to address the commission?
Okay. Does the commission have questions for the applicant?
I was hoping the architect would be here, but I have one question. Okay.
So, Jerry Shaw, would you mind approaching the podium?
I'm Jerry. I'm the designer of the project.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at the front of the RV garage, shows the setback part, mm-hmm, and it shows the windows are just like this. Is above the double doors to the flat roof, is there a parapet there,
mm-hmm,
making the windows? How high is that parapet?
I think it's about 18 feet, something like that. I can't quite remember.
Just the parapet from the flat roof to the top of that.
Yeah, I think the ceiling inside is 14 feet, and that's about a foot, so 15. That's about 17 to 18 feet high outside, the parapet itself.
So it's like a couple of feet from the flat roof,
mm-hmm,
to the top of the parapet,
mm-hmm,
is what I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of feet.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Commissioner Martin, do you have any questions?
I do not.
I don't either. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I do have a question for the applicant, if the applicant's here. Please.
Could you? Mr. Hobbs?
Yes.
Good evening.
Thank you.
Welcome. I guess my question is this motorhome structure and the storage on the second floor is pretty significant in size compared to the other structures on the size of the parcel. And I'm just curious, the need for 1,500 square feet of second story storage that's really accessed up a fairly narrow stairway and a 36-inch door.
Well, our warehouse in Exeter, California is twice that size, so that's what we're trying to get into that warehouse is all my wife's antique furniture.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is that all?
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. We can open up this matter to public comment. Do we have any speaker slips for this item? If anyone else has speaker slips for this item, you can bring them up to the front to Debbie. We'll just do it all at once.
Okay, my name is Doris Folkert.
Hang on, Doris, let's get these.
Oh, okay. My home sits right next door to the 230 Rena Street, and I would like to deny the project for the following reasons. The home and the RV garage will be too big and too tall. I will lose my privacy. The apartment will look into my yard and into my house. Also, it may block the sun in the afternoon. The building may block my solar panels. They will be removing a very nice tree in the yard after having already cut down a lot of other oak trees. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Folkerts?
Yeah.
The commissioner had a question for you. What side do you live on of the property?
Do you live on Rena or Dotson?
Rena.
Thank you.
Thank you. Scott Spierling? Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is Scott Spierling, 190 South Alpine Street in Arroyo Grande. I received public notice of this. I live about two blocks away and quite familiar with the area, lived there a number of years. My main concern is with consistency within the neighborhood and how this interacts with the rest of the neighborhood. The majority of our neighborhood is single story, with an occasional two-story building thrown in here and there. For the subject property, there are two-story apartments across the street to the south. I believe there's a two-story apartment to the north also. Those apartments have a height of approximately 22 feet. The second dwelling unit above the carport that's being proposed also has a maximum height of approximately 22 feet. To look at the additional height that's going to be put above that RV garage, I find it's going to be approximately 25% taller than any other building in the general neighborhood. In fact, trying to think of other buildings that are 30 feet high in the city of Arroyo Grande on flat land, there are few. I think the Oddfellows Hall over off of Bridge Street is slightly over 30 feet high, and I really can't imagine having that plopped down in our neighborhood. It just is so large, so massive. So There is that issue which concerns me, is just the massiveness of this proposed structure. The other thing that concerns me is the general character of the neighborhood. This is a multifamily zone, as staff has pointed out. This is also a transition zone. You do have some commercial properties on Halcyon Road. You have single-family residences scattered around. You have apartment buildings scattered around. But it is mostly residential in nature and very small-scale commercial. I think the largest commercial, well, most of the commercial is doctor's offices, which, again, are single-story in nature and very small. For this to propose approximately, I believe it's approximately 5,000 square feet of non-residential use versus approximately 2,000 square feet of residential use seems completely out of proportion with a residential zone. It appears to me that the primary use of the property is going to become something other than residential. It feels like it needs to be more in proportion to be to work. My time is up. I just have to say, I'm sure glad I don't have to haul those antique furniture up those stairs.
Thank you for your comments. Keith Spearling.
Some of the items I was going to talk about have already been covered here. You have my letter that I wrote to you last week. I intend to be on out of town this week, but I canceled plans just so I could be here this evening. My concerns, again, are the height of the building. My house sits adjacent to that property, just to the on the northerly property line. My house is oriented. I'm off of Halcyon Road, but my house is oriented so the front door looks out over Dodson. And so every time I walk out the front door, if this is developed, I'm going to see a 30-foot wall looking up like that right in my face. So in light of that, nobody would like to see that. I'm sure you wouldn't. So I would ask that that could be reduced in some manner. The second story, I'm not going to get into a whole lot, the second floor storage, because it would be a moot issue if you lowered the height of the building. Otherwise, it's going to be, I believe it'll be an enforcement issue. I will have to say that I, too, looked for buildings of 30 feet height. I could not find any in a residential zone. Commercial zone, yes. Residential zone, no. The closest I could come was, I'm sure that you're aware of the apartment complex that's being developed down the corner of the Pike and Elm Street. I checked, when I looked at the plans on those buildings are 24 feet, and that's a large project. The only thing else that I could find was that everybody could probably relate to is just east of the village is the school district bus barn or bus garage. I did a quick rough measurement trying to figure it out, and from the parking lot area on the east side of the building, that's approximately 30 feet high. So what you would be approving here is to stick that bus barn on that site. I don't think it's a real good fit. So I've talked about safety. I still worry about safety. If you get a moderate-sized motorhome, 35, 40 feet, and you're trying to jockey it into that spot with cars parked along both sides of the street, children playing in the apartment complex and around that area, and people walking around, I would hate to see somebody get hurt, and I worry about that. The apartment, I talked about in the letter. I'm not going to reiterate that, but my lawn is dying, and I'm conserving water, and it seems like you are looking at a proposal that will use twice as much water as if it was approved absent the CUP. And so it doesn't make sense to me a lot. And all in all, I know you're going to have to make certain findings regarding this project. I'm hoping between the letter and what we've said today, there's enough that you can find enough to at least send it back and have it redesigned to where it's more reasonable. The only other thing that I would ask is that if this commission is in any way or has any inclination to approve this tonight, I would ask that you table the approval and direct staff to install height poles on the property so that you and staff could come out and see exactly what the impact would be if a 30-foot structure were built there. Thank you. I appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers on this matter? Seeing none, I'll close the comment period and bring it back for comments by the commission. Do you want to start?
Thank you, Chair George. In general, I'm in favor of the change that I see here. I recognize that there are a number of exceptions to, you know, the building code and the standing ordinances. Requesting a 1,000-square-foot secondary residential unit is excessive in size compared to the existing home. Given the size of the lot, I don't have any kind of problem with that. I mean, in reality, the homeowner could have come 2 years, 5 years ago and have increased the size of the existing home to 1,600 or 1,800 square feet. Coming in and requesting to make a, you know, secondary unit 1,000 square feet would certainly be reasonable within guidelines at that point. And given the large size of the parcel, I don't have an issue looking at that as a reasonable variance. Given the layout of the property, I don't have an issue with the second driveway. My issue with the second driveway really comes in more to the what I consider to be an overbuilding of coverage for hardscape and, you know, kind of water use. If you add up the total area of all the structures, they may be within that 40 or nominally within or close to that 40%, you know, a build out given the size of the parcel. But when you start adding in the concrete walks and the asphalt drives and the concrete driveways, there's less than 30% of the parcel that is available and, you know, that's permeable for water. And I know that these things are being addressed. And I hold off making other comments until my fellow commissioners have a chance to kind of weigh in on some potential alternatives to perhaps decreasing the amount of either asphalt or concrete and increasing the amount of permeable, you know, landscape that's there on that parcel. Given that, my fundamental problem with this is similar to what's been expressed by some of the people here. I look at this 30-foot high, you know, secondary unit, a storage unit, and it does seem to me to be really out of step with what's going on in the neighborhood, excessive in height. You look at the building code as I read it, there are alternatives to 30 feet or 24 feet. I'm not sure exactly, you know, one or the other, but not really both. And this one, the way I'm looking at it, kind of says, well, we want to do both. I'm troubled that what we're going to add is 1,900 square foot of ground floor storage, and I certainly understand wanting to make something large enough to handle, you know, motorhome and other additional storage, and then another 1,500 square feet of storage above it. I just don't see where that whole second story storage is compatible with the neighborhood and critical to me on this. For me to support this project, you know, that 150 square feet reduction is nominal to me. I would seem to me that in final construction plans, that'd be fairly easy to address. I'd want to see something that would limit that RV storage building to a single story. And I'd be comfortable increasing that height limitation from 14 feet to something no higher than the roof line of the new structure that's sitting above the carport. So I'm going to guess that's 22 or 24 feet, whatever that height is over that new, you know, that new structure. But I would think on a single story with a pitched roof of some kind would probably come in somewhere under 20 feet, probably more like in the 18 to 20 foot range is the maximum height on that. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Commissioner Martin. Commissioner King?
Thank you. My comments are basically the same. I think the massing of this building is just way out of character with the neighborhood. I think it's way too big. I think that the conditions that the ARC put on about adding some windows to try to break up the sides of it where it's just a big plain wall. I think that's just not compatible. Even the two-story, all the two-story buildings down there, the apartments, they have windows and everything around them, so they're not broken. They're broken up, not one big massive wall on two sides of that building. And I just think it's out of character. One of the things that really concerned me was it looked to me like it's designed to make a second unit up there. The stairs, the single door, the 8-foot ceiling, that is going to be an apartment. And condition 15, the staff in our conditions of approval said a deed restriction shall be recorded with the county clerk recorder prohibiting the storage area from be converting to habitable space in the future. That takes care of that. But I'm still concerned that sometime it will change, and I think that would way over build the lot, allowable living in the lot. And so if we reduce, when I came in here, I thought if we would reduce the ceiling height in there to where it could never be an apartment, but still be storage, like to 6 foot or something, take 2 foot off of the height of the building to get that second story so it could never be converted to an apartment. And that's a big concern of mine. So I think making sure that doesn't get converted is very important to me for that property. I think putting some windows in, like the ARC said, will help the massing of it. I still don't know whether they ought to go on the second floor or first floor or both. But something needs to be done with them, and then the planning on the west side, I think will help break up that big blank wall, and I think it's very important to get that done. It's just not fair to the neighbors to have to look at that like that. I didn't find. Anything else that there was really concerned about, but I am concerned about the massing of that building. It's just too big, too much mass. Thank you.
I concur with that statement. What I like about this project is it allows for more housing, and we definitely need more housing. I have no problem increasing the square footage allotment past the 50% for the primary residence to allow for a three-bedroom. I think having a three-bedroom secondary dwelling is nice. It allows for families to be able to rent it, or if you have family that you want to live there, rent a unit however you want it. So I have no problem with increasing the required, the proposed square footage beyond what is in code. Sorry, excuse me. As far as the new driveway, I don't really see a need for that second driveway since the one that you have it currently, if it gets replaced with a newer, because part of the conditions is to remove it and replace it with a new one, I'm not sure why there would be a need for a second driveway right there. All that said and done, I went over to the property and I stood there and I tried with all my heart to understand how a 30-foot storage unit / RV storage would fit in that spot, and I couldn't see it. I felt really bad for the neighbors right behind you on Dodson having to look up at that massing, and we can talk about everything, but the bottom line is it's just too tall. So unless the commission can come up with some sort of an alternative option, I can't support the project at this time as it's been presented to us. So those are my comments. So I'll bring it back to the commissioners. Do you have any? Mr. Martin, any suggestions? Well, my recommendation would be to modify and adopt the attached resolution requiring the new garage and storage area to be reduced in height to 14 feet. That would be my recommendation. And also, even with that, to add windows to the west side as per the ARC comments. Commissioner Martin?
I can support that, I guess, and I'm not sure how much flexibility we really have to go from 14 to say, I'm going to say 18. I think what I've heard was that the roll-up doors on the face of this RV storage are either 12 or 14 feet high. I think that would probably necessitate, you know, with a pitched roof, of getting that roof up to, I'm going to say, 18 to 20 feet. This is an estimation, but it's of some kind. I'm in favor of approving this plan with the condition that the storage is a single story. I'm not married to 14 as an absolute maximum, but if you know, this structure is a single story structure, you know, with a roof line that's appropriate for that single, you know, that's appropriate, you know, for that single story structure, you know, given the tall nature of the 14. I don't think that the applicant should need to compromise the height of those roll-up doors if they're currently, I'm not sure if they're 12 or 14 feet. 14. Yeah, I'm not motivated to force them to make that shorter, but I am motivated to make that structure a single story and whatever the appropriate roof line is supporting that.
So, Teresa, what would be an appropriate roof line for a 14-foot roll-up door?
You do have latitude in terms of the alternative that you're discussing. The 14-foot was indicated because that's the height of an accessory structure, and that's why that recommendation was made. Certainly the height equal, I think I heard Commissioner Martin mentioned the height equal to the construction of the second unit above the carport would be about 22 feet. That would certainly give ample leeway for the RV storage doors and roof line structures, and perhaps be more in line with the maximum height that you would see with existing two-story structures and the apartment structures and so forth in the neighborhood, still probably being a couple feet higher than that. So if that helps, you know, the structure attached above the carport is about 22 feet. That would give ample room for the RV structure and a single-story RV storage without the secondary storage built on top.
What would the minimum, I know 22 is going to meet match the carport, what would be the minimum that would height that would be required for a 14-foot roll-up? I guess I'm trying to avoid having the 22 feet but right up to the property line for the neighbor. So if it's a transition, if we can go from, I don't know, I know 14 is a door, so 18 to 22, at least there's a little bit of a break up there.
On the drawings, you can see there is a 15-foot area between the side of that building and the property line, but even the bottom pitch, the way that roof is pitched, even if the top hip of that pitch, the crown of that pitch is at 22 on a 312, I'm going to guess that probably end up being about 17 or 18 feet. I'm not sure how much far down that would be, but that edge there of that structure would probably be 17 or 18 feet anyway, and maybe even lower than that. And for my from my position, that lower edge there, given the 15 feet from the edge of the building to that property line, would certainly reduce that, the appearance and the just the huge monolithic wall that would sit there. I would certainly not want to remove any requirement the ARC made that windows be included on that side wall, even with reduced height. I do believe that those windows is an essential part of, you know, those two, the rear face and that west face on that structure.
Are you talking about making, like your first suggestion, to making the roof the same height as the secondary, the new secondary?
No taller. If you know, I'm going to give the architect some leeway. If they can draw, we have a single story structure. It does have a 14 foot front, you know, roll up door on it. We can make that architecturally finished at 20 feet 6 inches. I don't have a problem with that. What I don't want to have come back and say, well, to fit architecturally, it needs to be 28 feet tall. To me, that absolute maximum would be no higher than the crown of the hip on that apartment structure that next to it, which is approximately 22 feet, the way I understand it. So then I'm looking at that as a maximum cap, not that it has to match.
Right. Yeah. I agree with
that. I mean, I can support a resolution with the condition that this becomes a single-story structure, and that 14 foot is not tall enough to accommodate an RV storage with a 14 foot roll up door, but with these other conditions, you know, that the total height at the top of that hip not exceed, you know, the height of the new apartment that's being constructed. Yeah, I'll make that as a motion. Is that thorough enough in my?
No. So I just want, I don't want to be to the top of the second story dwelling. I want it to be you're saying, I guess I'm trying to understand what you're.
Well, if you look at the drawing here, look at it that's up there on the wall.
Right.
The one on the left where you can see the crown of the pitch of that apartment is there. And if that structure is about 22 feet, that point there, the hip line of the storage unit is perpendicular to that. And you can now, you know, the very top, you can see that whole roof. That's that whole long line that's currently, you know, 30 feet high. That whole line would be reduced to no more than 22 feet. My guess is architecturally, and just to make it fit, that might end up being exactly the same because it might be the easiest to try to build and construct it that way. But if it ends up being a foot shorter or 2 feet shorter, that's even better. I mean, if it can be shorter, that's better for me. But I don't want that height to be any taller than the crown of that hip on that new structure.
So how tall is it to there? Matt, do you know? I'm sorry, I don't have the plans open. But how tall is it to there? Does 17 feet allow for the RV doors to roll up and for it to actually work, the 17 feet?
Yeah, Jerry, you need to come to the podium, please. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your...
Maybe I can clear it up.
Thank you.
If we're going to use a 14-foot high door and eliminate the top storage unit, we'll probably have about 15.5-foot high wall for the header across the top of those doors to be installed. And at a 3-12 pitch, it'll be about 45 inches high at the center, so that makes it a little less than 19 feet high. So, you know, 20 feet high at the peak of the roof, if we remove that top element, would be about right, which would be less than the other building there.
Thank you very much. That helped me a lot. So, Glenn, can we cap it at 20 feet? I'm hoping for lower than that, so that the people who live behind on Dodson are going to see a gradual up to this point, not just that point all the way across.
Yeah, and they will, as long as the orientation of that roofline remains the same on that RV.
I understand.
RV building. I didn't want to be second guessing the architect. You know, building something on his feet in the middle of a meeting and limiting him to whether it's 20 or 21 feet at the maximum. I'm going to, you know, I know Jerry's a knowledgeable and skilled architect, right. and I'm assuming that he, you know, that's a pretty good guesstimate of the new height. But I'd hate to put, I'd rather not put a 20-foot limit. It's where when he goes back to his drawing board and it needs to be 20 feet 8 inches, suddenly he's not in compliance with the, you know, the resolution that we've approved.
That's, I just don't want it to end up being a 24-foot and one-story 24-foot either. So I'm trying to find a way to accomplish.
Well, under my proposal, it would be a single-story 22-foot because the crown on that existing, that other building's at 22 feet. So the top of the roof line of this storage unit shall not be any higher than the crown of the apartment building that's there.
Commissioner King, yeah. Okay. So, say that again as a motion.
Okay.
Commissioner Martin, while you're gathering your thoughts, I just a reminder to include if the Planning Commission concurs the ARC recommendations as well.
Yes.
Will do. Thank you. Let me just find where my notes are here. Okay, you ready? I move the Planning Commission approve conditional use permit 15-003, construction of a 1,000-square-foot secondary dwelling unit and construction of a 1,980-square-foot garage, excluding the 1,500-square-foot second-story storage at 230 South Rena, applicant being Stephen and Donis Hobbs, with the following condition that the RV storage be limited to a single story and the top of the roof line to not be any higher than the roof line of the new residential structure that it's attached to, and include the recommendations as outlined from the ARC meeting of 2 weeks ago.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for the approval of the resolution with the conditions specified. Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
And Chair George?
Yes. And the matter passes 3-0. We'll move on to appeal case number 15-003, the appeal of determination relating to plot plan review case number 15-007. The location is 1305 Newport Avenue, and the appellant is Julie Burkhart. Can we please have a staff report?
Yes, indeed. Sorry, Chair George. This is item 8B. It's consideration of appeal number 15-003. It's the appeal of the approval of plot plan review 15-007 for the establishment of a four-bedroom vacation rental located at 1305 Newport. So to orient ourselves, the property is zoned single-family. Surrounding land uses are all residential. Now, background about the vacation rental ordinance, which you may recall from previous meetings. In 2013, the city became aware that a number of residents in the city were operating either vacation rentals or homestays, homestays being owner-occupied dwellings, vacation rentals being non-owner-occupied dwellings. And at that time, there were no city regulations in place regarding these issues and these uses. Staff did develop a draft ordinance for public review and input. We conducted two public workshops, we held two Planning Commission public hearings, and we held a City Council public hearing as well to ensure that the regulations were appropriate for the city. And then in June 2014, the City Council did adopt Ordinance Number 663 with regulations specifically crafted in response to many of the concerns that were raised by members of the public at that time. So this Ordinance 663 did allow vacation rentals and homestays in residential districts. It did require that these uses obtain a plot plan review as well as requiring safety inspection, the operator to obtain a business license, and payment of transient occupancy tax. Additionally, vacation rentals do require a local contact person. That contact information is mailed to all neighboring property owners and is updated annually with the city. Overnight occupants for vacation rentals are limited to two persons per bedroom and two additional for the common living room area. And additional regulations are intended to ensure that the use is compatible with the neighborhood. So the applicant did submit an application for a plot plan review to establish a vacation rental in an existing four-bedroom residence. This did come after some code enforcement activities by Neighborhood Services Department and Community Development Department. Originally, the applicant was acting as his own local contact person to meet the intent of the code so that out-of-town property owners do not just absentmindedly sit by and not manage the property. The applicant did provide an additional contact who lives in Napomo to staff, and that contact information will be mailed to all neighbors if the Planning Commission denies the appeal and approves the project. In this particular vacation rental, the overnight occupants are limited to 10 persons. Again, that's two per bedroom for the four bedrooms and then two additional. In this instance, the residence does include two living spaces. However, the code is not written to allow two additional for having a family room and a living room or two living rooms. So it's just two for the rest of the house. So that's why it's limited to 10 and not more. Additionally, on-site advertising is prohibited. That's just a standard condition. The plot plan review was approved on August 18th. Notices were sent to all neighboring property owners with the applicant's information and appeal information, and the project was appealed on August 18th. Staff did review the project in accordance with CEQA and found that it's exempt per Section 15301 of the CEQA guidelines regarding existing facilities. And for tonight's meeting, since appeals are publicly notified, public hearing notices were mailed to all property owners within 300 feet of the site, were posted in the Tribune and on the city's website, and posted at City Hall on September 4th. The agenda and staff report were posted on the city's website and at City Hall on September 11th. And staff has spoken to several neighbors, neighboring property owners regarding this, the city's regulations and the proposed use. And some of that correspondence is included with a staff report. And at this time, staff does recommend that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution denying appeal number 15-003 and approving plot plan review 15-007. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Matt. Does commissioners have any question for staff? Commissioner Martin?
I do have just a couple of quick questions. Included with our package was attachment 4. Apparently, staff made a presentation. Director McClish made a presentation, I'm guessing, to City Council, just kind of giving an update on kind of what was going on with vacation rentals and the homestays. It looks like we currently have 5 licensed vacation rentals in the city. How close is the nearest one to this specific location? Is it even in the same neighborhood, or it's a half mile away? I'm sorry I didn't call beforehand and give you an opportunity to confirm that, but
I was looking to see on that attachment if it did include the map that was presented to the City Council, and it does not. There is not another one within the neighborhood anywhere nearby, either a vacation rental or a homestay. Staff has found that in the implementation of the ordinance, most of these rentals are appearing on the east side of the highway. Seems to be congregating in the vicinity of the village.
Okay. And then the other question, and this has more to do with some of the notes and the correspondence from some of the neighbors. This house is not zoned, or now that it's not zoned, the structure itself, although it looks like historically it may have been used as two different residential units, it hasn't passed any kind of code that allows them to do two separate units, so it wouldn't be possible for the owner to say, I'm going to rent out this bottom little one-bedroom unit as a little single one-bedroom long-term residential project and then reduce the vacation rental to what's going on above. They don't have the ability under this license or under their current structure to split that upstairs and downstairs and have part of it vacation, part of it just a long-term typical rental?
That's correct. And in part of processing, pardon me, this permit, we did have outstanding building code violations as well. So normally after approval, we require the safety inspections to occur. In this case, because we had open code violations and we couldn't continue processing the project without rectifying those, safety inspections were performed. The illegal secondary dwelling unit down below was decommissioned and the entire residence was returned to one residence. Additionally, there's a condition of approval in the resolution that does prohibit that bottom floor from being rented out separately in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. Apparently my reading, I glossed over that little detail on that, but thank you very much. I want to be able to confirm that.
That's it.
Thanks, Chair King. No, I have no questions either. Is the appellant here? Julie Burkhart, would you like to come up and speak? Before you speak, I just wanted to mention that in the past, I found some of these hearings, when they involve our immediate property or properties next to us, tend to be a little, tends to be a little more tension. So if you could please, if speakers could please just try to address the commission with your comments, questions, concerns, and limit your time to 3 minutes, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, I'll try and do that.
Thank you.
I've lived next door to this rental for 6 years. There's been all sorts of people there. The last people who left were the ones that told me there would be an Airbnb. So that's when I started to go to the city to find out what's required, what's needed, how can you do this? I went there several times. I've written several letters because he's been renting this as a Airbnb since the beginning of March, and he's continued to do this until current. And he did rent both units, and he had them advertised, which I guess now is an issue that's solved. However, my street is a very small street. It's a single lane. It has a hill on one side, and the residences are on the other side, so parking is very, very limited. In addition, it's a dead-end street. The school is a block away. It's a single-family neighborhood, and families live in this neighborhood. It's not appropriate to have a hotel next to my house, you know, where I don't know who's going to be staying there right next door. And I can see them, and I can see what they're doing. As well as me, it has a balcony that you can see all the other neighbors around you. I don't think any of them like it either. I just am really very much against this in this single-family neighborhood. There's parking problems because he rents to 10 people. You could have 10 cars there at one time, and I think I don't know where they would park. There's nowhere to park. I think he can have 4 cars there at one time on his property. They have asked me to move my cars for them, and I've told them, hey, it's the neighbor's cars that are parked in front of my house. And the neighbors have been very considerate of this. And also, you know, you can only go down the street one way, so we respect those kind of rules. You know, you get over and let people pass by. However, with this vacation rental, there are people from outside of the neighborhood. The other issues are there's no regulation about dogs. This property has a huge yard, and I don't know what the regulations are about how many dogs you can have in a vacation rental and how are they going to be attended. And so you can have barking at all hours of the night and not be able to do anything about it. The other problem is the owner is very difficult to reach for the neighbors. Now, I hear tonight that we do have another contact that we can reach, but we don't know that phone number at all. And right now, the owner lives 45 minutes away. So, you know, I just really don't think it's appropriate. All right, thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Did the commissioners have any questions for the appellant? No. So I'll open it up to public comment. And Connie Mooney. Good evening.
Hi. I'm sure you already read my letter, too, so I won't read it again. I also read the reports that you sent to Ms. Burkhart about the vacation rentals, and it says in there no less than five times a proposed vacation rental should be compatible with the neighborhood in which it's located in terms of landscaping, scale, and architecture. The use shall be harmonious and compatible with the existing uses in the neighborhood. The physical location or placement of the site is compatible with the surrounding neighborhood. We don't believe that that is true. He has a picture of, he's a two-story house. He looks down into our yard. Everybody that comes and stays there looks down into our yard. They can see inside of our house, inside of our dining room. It's just not a great place to have a hotel is the way we were looking at it. I don't believe a vacation rental should be allowed in any residential neighborhood, but especially the one that's in question. Many neighbors and I do not believe that the site is compatible with the surrounding neighborhood. The occupants have a clear view into yards of at least four of the neighbors and can see into our dining room. We no longer feel as comfortable spending time in our yard as we used to. Not only have there been very disruptive occupants, but the feeling of getting to know your neighbors over the fence is lost and replaced with strangers coming and going every few days. We have lived there for 24 years and never expected the city or the Planning Commission would allow a hotel to move in next door to us. It's a major issue, and it might be different if we had six-foot fences and they couldn't see into every yard around them and every balcony next to them and on down below. They've woken us up quite a few times, and I'm hoping, you know, that that is not going to happen anymore. We've never called the police. We've only called the contact person. But it's just, it's such a huge house, and the potential for 10 or 12 people being in that house. They come to party. They don't come to respect the neighborhood. They don't have to get up the next day to go to work. So it's been a continuous in and out of people every 3 days. It's just not, it's not fair to the neighbors, I don't think.
Thank you for your comments. Richard Friedman.
Yeah, my name is Richard Friedman. I am, I live at 1371 Newport. I dropped off a check because we have to pay to fight these things now, which is really kind of backwards. But anyway, I talked to Julie's roommate. She endured catcalls, you know, inappropriate behavior. I'd like to ask, beyond the fact that the street is narrow and requires the neighbors to be respectful of each other, both for the ingress and egress and the parking, what does the commission feel that the city is going to gain by $40 a night when there's going to be repeated police activity there? And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Kathleen Salazar.
Good evening. My name's Kathleen Salazar. We live at 1231 Newport, which is the very last house on the cul-de-sac on the street. And it has, in the past, been very difficult when large groups of people have rented this property because we have not been able to access our property. You, as they have mentioned, it's a very narrow street. There have been situations where people have two cars in the driveway, a pickup behind it, sticking out actually into the street as far as the parking goes. There was one incident where there were a large group of young men there, pick up in the middle of the street, people talking to it. I couldn't access my home. So my main concern, luckily we're five houses away, so we do not hear the noise or have the impact of the neighbors quite as much, but my main impact is access to my property when we have so many people on the street, in the yards, and we can't access her property. We have to sit there and wait because they don't understand that if they're in the middle of the road, no one can get in. They're more interested in talking to their friends. So this has been our experience so far, and I find it very difficult that it does not give us the opportunity to enjoy our property because of what's in our neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard Nuffin?
Richard Duffin, 1398 Newport Avenue. I live on the upside of the street, but the same thing happens and has happened in the past about the narrowness of the street that they're referring to. It also can happen on the upper side. And if you ever had a fire in that area, that large fire truck will never get there, especially on the lower side when that street is much narrower down there. As far as the noise and stuff like this is concerned, people going in there, I've been a landlord before, and I understand the possibility of having damage to the house inside. I don't know why anybody would want to lease out their house on this kind of condition and go back in and have thousands of dollars worth of damage done to it. I've had a house where I've had to have damage to it and had three-quarter ton pickup backed up in there and took out that many diapers out of a house that somebody rented from me one time and left behind. Given that, though, the neighborhood is not compatible with this type of activity as far as they call it a hotel. That's a good description because it turns out to be that way. There's plenty of hotels, motels in this area that they can easily rent. And if you've ever been in a motel, you have to sign a paper now that says, thou shalt pay for anything you steal, take away from the motel. I don't know what this guy's doing, but if he has that condition, he's going to have to start charging people for damage to his home. It doesn't compatible. It's not compatible with the Newport area. I've lived there since 1952. It's not compatible. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Are there any other public comments? Thank you.
Hi, I'm Chris Barrett, 1340 Newport. I live on the uphill side of Newport.
Mr. You need to stay at the dais.
Thank you. I live on the uphill side of Newport, and I'm concerned about the noise. This is a block and a half away from Ocean View School. This is not compatible with the neighborhood. I'm concerned about parking. There's 10 people staying overnight, and more people visiting during the day. The parking's, you know, ridiculous. That's a non-standard size street, and so parking is going to be an issue. It has been in the past. Noise has been an issue. There's just been a poor choice of renters for that neighborhood. Prior to, I don't know, a year ago, people renting there put a dog cage in the front yard, so it looked like a dog kennel out in front. And so the dogs barked a lot, and very disruptive. And lastly, about water conservation, any day you have 10 people using a house, it's going to use a lot more water than any other houses in that area. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for your comments. Is the homeowner here? I was hoping you were here.
I'd just like to take the time to address some of the concerns that the neighbors have. Seems like most people are talking about parking. Most people are driving in from San Francisco, Los Angeles. We've had people fly in from as far away as Norway. They're not bringing 5 and 6 cars. They're carpooling and bringing 2, sometimes 3 cars. There have been times where we've had people who thought they might have a 4th or a 5th car, and we've directed them to park the car at Food for Less, which is about a block away. Stipulations of the permit allows for 2 cars to park in the garage, 2 in the driveway. That would be a total of 4 cars. We've never had an issue with that since then. Additionally, using the Airbnb site, you may or may not be aware, people are reviewed. We're able to see who we're renting to. And unfortunately, some people just aren't all that truthful about what they're going to be doing there. We've tried to limit this to families, and we've had a tremendous amount of success. Some of the people have brought up the fact about what has happened in the past, and I'll readily admit we've had some terrible renters in the past, and those were the permanent renters. Since we've turned this into a vacation rental, water usage, we pulled out the front lawn and we put in turf. In addition to that, we've been able to put in low water landscaping. We've actually been able to improve the house since we've been able to do the short-term rentals. People are only there Fridays and Saturday nights now. I would think more often than not, you'd be happier knowing that people weren't there 5 days out of every seven, only 2 or 3 days a week. For us, it's been a very good experience. We've had issues in the past. Connie has had no problem calling me. I've actually talked to the renters. Boom, it's off, just like that. She's never had to call the cops because anytime there has been an issue, I've made a phone call, and the issue has been resolved. Anytime Julie's tried to get in touch with me, I answer the phone and I talk to her as well. But as a condition of the permit, you know, we did have a friend who lives in Napomo, and so he's been put down as a contact as well. I don't live 45 minutes away. It takes me 25 minutes to get here. And those are the issues that, you know, I just wanted to address. We do our best to try and make this work in the neighborhood. It's a residential neighborhood, and this is an opportunity for people to come across the world to visit the Pismo Dunes. That's what they like to come here and do, is to visit the dunes. And they like to vacation as a family, and it gives them an affordable option to be able to do that. And so I think the regulations as they are written are very strict and stringent. You know, I've had to spend literally thousands of dollars to make this thing compliant. There was an issue with the downstairs rental being a separate unit, as you said, and as a condition of getting this permit, I had to remove sinks, I had to remove stoves. I mean, it's a one-bedroom place now. You know, I mean, it's a singular house now, you know, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I'd love to be able to get it, you know. We plan on painting it, we plan on plastering it. We're able to actually, you know, up until now, we struggled just to pay the mortgage on the place. But we do our best to try and make it fit in the neighborhood at this point. And that's all I have to say. If you guys have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. You can stay there. Commissioner Martin, do you have any questions?
I believe you've already answered them, and I appreciate you being here to do that. I just wanted to be able to confirm that you as the owner, you know, recognize over the past few years there have been issues and problems. You recognize that this will be a registered location, you know, within the city as a vacation rental, assuming, you know, that we do pass this denial, this resolution that's sitting tonight, and you're prepared just to comply, you know, with
that's the idea behind this. You know, as soon as we were made aware that, oh, you have to be licensed, we said, okay, what do we got to do? Okay. We're happy to play. You know, tell me what the rules are. I'll play by the rules.
I just want to be able to confirm that was you clearly understood. Thank you.
Yeah, I do.
Commissioner, when did you convert it from a long-term rental to vacation rental?
We had to evict the last tenants, and that's when we moved towards making it into a vacation rental, and that happened towards the end of March.
Of this year. So it's been a vacation rental since March of 2015?
Yeah.
And since March until now, how many times have you rented it out?
I'm going to round up maybe 20.
Okay. And of those 20 times, how many times do you recall getting phone calls from the neighbors with complaints?
Twice.
Okay. Those are my questions for you. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. One last one. You're saying it's only rented Friday through Saturday right now?
Well, that's been the way that it's been. In general, people come in to vacation for the weekend and then leave.
But you're not limiting to that?
No, we don't limit it to that. If they want to rent it for a week, we'll rent it for a week. We had one person that wanted to rent it for 60 days, and we said, no, that's not what we're doing.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do we have any other comments on this matter? Yes? Yes.
Okay.
State your name again.
My name is Julie Burkhart, and I'm protesting this, whatever it is. Jeff made it sound like it was his idea to put the grass in. I believe it was the renter's idea that they asked the landlord to put in these, not sod, but, you know, the plastic grass in the front. And I believe that was at the tenant's request. And the tenants were out of there the end of February. And then the other thing I wanted to say is, while I was on my driveway one day, the people who were renting that house asked me if I knew the landlord. And I said yes. Why did they want to know? They were very displeased with their vacation rental. They were from Norway, and they had traveled a long way to have this vacation rental. And the one thing they wanted to know, is it legal to be videotaped in a vacation rental, because that's what they do, is they tape everybody in the house. And is that legal? I don't know. They said the deck was in poor shape. They wondered about the safety of having children on it. This was before, I guess, it was fixed. I'm just, all in all, this vacation rental is in sad shape. I believe it's in poor condition. I don't know how many return rentals he's had. I believe it should be shut down, as I said before. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, I'll close the comment period and bring it back to the commissioners. I believe that when the permit process goes through, if it gets approved and it goes through, the neighbors do. But let me defer to staff on that.
That's correct. Given that we don't know the Planning Commission's how the Planning Commission was going to vote, staff was reluctant to provide that information, being that if the vacation rental was shut down, we didn't want to just hand out somebody's contact information. However, if the Planning Commission does approve it, staff will send out a very similar notice to what you've already received with the additional contact information.
I hope that answered your question. Okay. So, Commissioner Keene, do you have any comments?
One question. Teresa, several years ago, and I don't know how many, and it may not have been several, there was one of those houses along there that was rented to several young boys that parked on the upper street and walked back and forth, and eventually the police had to get them, stop them from parking up there because it narrows that street up above. I'm wondering if this is the same house that we had all that trouble with, the several people parking up there.
I would not be able to confirm if that's the same house or not. I would be able to say there, occasionally through the years, we get complaints regarding the parking there. The streets are not standard, and it is exacerbated by parking.
Thank you. That's all the questions I had.
Do you have any comments?
Sure. I understand that this new phenomenon that we've got going on in the state, country, Airbnb is a thorn in everybody's side except for the people that are renting out. That's one of the reasons we went through this process of developing this plan so extensively. We took several public hearings, put all of it together that we could make it compatible for everybody, or try to, and came up with this plan that I'm sure you've all gotten read. This one, because of the narrow street in front of it, is a little different than the ones that we've looked at before. And the parking out there is definitely a problem and will be a problem. There are four spaces, and one of the conditions of approval, or conditions that we can add, is to condition approval to be added that requires the garage to be kept clear and available for parking to alleviate neighborhood concerns regarding crowded streets. So I think that's one of the things that we really is going to be important on this project, on this one, because there is such a parking problem. Even though, you know, worst case scenario, there could be 10 cars there. But because of the way the rest of them have operated, that's generally everybody that comes in a family doesn't drive their own car. So I think that's just a scenario that just won't work out. won't come to fruition that 10 cars are going to be there. It just, that's just not how it works. So because he has met the requirements, I'm willing to move forward with this, with the addition that the garage is not a storage unit, is available for parking at all times. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner King. Commissioner Martin?
Yeah, thank you. My comments are consistent with Commissioner Keene's. Vacation rentals do exist. They're going to continue to exist. They're probably going to continue to grow. With the absence of something that is registered with the city, there are going to be the potential for situations and problems like that have existed at this residence historically are much greater than they would be or they will be once these things get registered and monitored. As sympathetic as I am with the neighbors, I agree that the property owner is in compliance with the ordinance as it was developed and approved by City Council. My recommendation, I'm in agreement with Commissioner Keene's condition that the garage be made available. I would also encourage the property owner to include with his notes to those vacation renters that this is, you know, the specific situation with the street, that it's a narrow street, and to recognize that and to deal with that. To the neighbors, I think having this as a registered location will improve your ability to contact either the owner or the owner's representative. And in addition, it'll improve the ability for the neighbors to report problems to the city. The city in this past year, in reality, has a pretty small number of these vacation units that are here. We have not had a history of problems, you know, being reported to the city on these units. I'm not going to sit here and say that this location is not going to have problems, but, you know, historically, those that have been approved have not reported problems with the city. But there is a mechanism. If this becomes a problematic location, you can, at some point in time, I'm sure that there's an appeal process of some kind in order to get this approval either revoked or limited of some kind in order to make sure that it is in compliance. As long as the property owner is following the conditions that the City Council has approved and have been in existence, and you know, we're not fighting a large number of these vacation rentals in that neighborhood, I don't see a mechanism that we can approve this appeal.
Thank you, Commissioner Martin. I share the same sentiments as my fellow commissioners. I believe that vacation rentals are going to happen whether or not we like them to. If they are not regulated, there could be two or three in your neighborhood instead of just one. So for me, having the regulations in place, having the city having the foresight to know that this is a growing issue and concern and addressing it in the manner in which Commissioner Keene had already stated, they've done their due diligence. And for us, all we can do is make sure that when the applicants come through us that they meet all the requirements, and in this case the applicant does. As far as all the noise, the parking, the local contact, all of those concerns are addressed once there's a permit. There is an occupancy limit, so without the permit he could rent it to 12, 14, 20 people, and there's no way for the city really to enforce it because there's no code. So now that there is a permit process and he has 20 people, that's something that's now enforceable. So actually having a permit is in the best interest of the citizens of Rio Grande, because then violations can be enforced. I just have one comment about the videotaping. I don't know if that's real or not real, or that's just something that is bothersome to me. I don't know I don't know. That's just something that's bothersome to me. So if the staff can address that with the applicant, I don't know if it's legal or not legal, but if staff can just look into that. As far as the condition of the units, again, having it be a permitted vacation rental, the conditions will have to be maintained because the city has to approve the property. So with all that being said, I see no reason to move forward with this appeal, and I can't support the appeal.
Like a motion?
I am looking. You can motion, I can motion.
So I will move that we approve the resolution of the Planning Commission denying the appeal on the case number 15-003 and approving the plot plan review case number 15-007 located at 1305 Newport Avenue, applied for by Jeff Giltinan, with the specific additional condition that the garage be maintained in a available situation, available condition for visitor parking, to limit the off-property parking at that location.
I'll second that. We have a motion and a second. Could we please get a roll call vote?
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
And Commissioner King?
Yes.
So the matter passes 3-0. We're just going to have a comment.
Just has nothing to do with that. I'd like to address the owner. Just in the staff report, it says that the hope is that the property owner will better screen potential renters in course and respond to the neighbors' concerns quickly, since the permit has been issued to the city as an oversight of the rental. I know you keep records. When there's one letter in here that specifically the renters were pretty obnoxious, it sounds like. Do you keep a history that you will not rent to those people again?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Most of these people here, the way the Airbnb site works is they register, they put in their personal information. If they've stayed in other places, those other owners have reviewed their experience. More often than not these days, a lot of people, when they're doing Airbnb, have never rented anywhere else before. And so you don't have any experience on them, and you can only go on their word. And so when we have a negative experience such as that, we give them a negative review. Thereby, somebody else will never rent to them again, nor will we, obviously. And so it's one of those self-regulated sites where when a person doesn't do things right, they get a negative review because of it. If the property's not maintained right, they review us negatively. If they have problems with the neighbors, they review us negatively. So on and so forth. So it's been a very popular rental given its size and its price and location. We've tried our best to limit it to families. You know, but you just can't say, oh, well, you're not a family, you can't rent it.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we'll move on to non-public hearing items, and we have none. So notice of administrative decision since September 1st. There is a new vintage clothing store that is going to have a wall sign and a new projecting sign. Fundraiser barbecue by Troop 489 and two 20 by 30 foot tents for a church convention.
Just an observation. I thought we used to have the dates when these were occurring, and they're not on here, and I'm wondering just how long the tents are going to be there, and whether the fundraised barbecue thing is every weekend or.
You know, I noticed the same thing this evening when I was trying to find the dates of the events. So we'll certainly be happy to rectify that. For the church item, the temporary use permit, for the conference. It is September 28th and through September 30th.
Thank you.
Glenn, do you have any questions? No. Okay. Next, we'll move on to commission communications.
I'm going to make a little comment, and since we can't discuss it, I'll probably make a motion that we ask for it to be agendized. Several years ago, I don't know how many, I'm not good at that, but it became a policy of the state and cities and everything to reduce parking at every place. And the theory was that if you don't have parking, people will start riding their bikes and walking and using public transportation, and that hasn't worked. That, whatever you want to call it, theory, just has not worked, especially in a community our size. And so because the last four projects that we've reviewed all met parking standards, but the commission felt like every one of those was underparked. And what I would like to do is to get consensus from the commissioners to have an agendized item and talk about what we can do to stop us from having to turn down a project or have a big long discussion about parking when they actually meet the code.
I completely agree. It's something that has really bothered me. It's hard for me to deny a project that comes through that meets the code when we know functionally it's not going to work. Yeah. So I completely agree. It was a frustration of mine as well. Commissioner Martin?
I guess the comment that I would make, it certainly would be an interesting discussion for our commission to sit there and address. For me, I think it'd probably be a better format or a better mechanism, you know, for this discussion is to have what I'm going to call as a workshop of some kind that would include probably both, you know, representatives from ARC and the City Council. You know, obviously, I don't want to be getting into Brown Act and group, you know, meetings where any kind of violation for public information. That's, we can certainly invite the public to come and participate and observe and comment. But I think that this specific discussion, which is sorely needed, and I agree that it's sorely needed, needs to occur in an arena that's greater than just the Planning Commission. There were some interesting comments made by City Council people on a recent, you know, project, you know, that they dealt with. But I think that getting, you know, their observations and comments and maybe even updated observations and comments from the public would allow us to have a better idea of really what's happening in the city. And rather than just having our five voices and our five opinions on this, we can get a better sense. I mean, we're certainly not in consensus or in agreement all the time whether it should be two parking spaces or three parking spaces at a specific location. But I do agree that you know, the parking ordinance as it stands doesn't seem to be working and certainly creates a frustrating situation for applicants. But my recommendation is that we encourage, you know, City Council probably to take the lead or staff to take the lead to develop a workshop format of some kind where this becomes one, if not the only, you know, item of discussion.
Sooner rather than later, for sure. And just on a side note, I'd like to see more of these projects come through with electric plug options for electric vehicles. That would be a nice, and I haven't seen them on any proposal, so it'd be nice to see some of those be encouraged, you know, have the applicants encouraged to put some in. That being said, I have two comments. One, I'm really happy that Commissioner Keene is back. And two, I had issue with the agenda tonight, and I had issue with the fact that a 30-foot structure, proposed structure, actually made it to the Planning Commission. I just think that's something that when it got to the Staff Advisory Committee, it's just common sense that it was just way too big and way too massive. So I'm not sure if I guess I don't know the process. I'm not sure if the process for the Staff Advisory Committee is just to take everything that the applicant wants and then try to make it fit. But by the time it got to us, I was surprised that it even made it past the ARC, quite honestly. When I was on the ARC, we nitpick height like no other. So the fact that I read it today and that it had to come all the way to the Planning Commission for it to be denied was frustrating to me. So I don't know at what point do we draw the line between what is an acceptable variance from the code and just blatantly just throwing the code out the window and saying, well, you know, we can try to make it work. So I guess for me that was just a frustration that I had tonight, that if there's a way to, in the process before it gets to the Planning Commission, to save the applicant's time as well as the city's time to address issues like that.
Yes, thank you. Regarding both comments, I think we've heard from previous comments and on the commission that, you know, some struggle with parking. We will be happy to try to look at the best way to approach, you know, revisiting some of our parking standards. I have a quick clarification on that. I think I've asked this before, but are you finding the parking standards to be deficient or problematic for residential parking projects or commercial parking projects or both?
Well, both, I think, because if we're talking about one or two houses, no. But if we're talking about like Ash Street, that to me had a, they qualified for the parking. I mean, they met the standards. But I'm not sure that it's enough. The one up on the mountaintop on Rodeo, or I think that was a huge parking problem. The Alzheimer's Center, you know, so we can go along to practically everything we hear meets the standards, meets the code, and it just doesn't look logical that there's enough parking spots.
Okay, thank you. Concurrence, looks like some nodding there. Great, thanks. And
if I can make a comment, you know, I guess in full disclosure, I do commercial real estate property management every single day. I'm very familiar with the parking criteria in commercial properties. I don't have as much of an issue on the commercial side. You know, certainly different people, you know, may disagree with me. Some of the comments we've heard on the recent commercial development over there off of Cortland, where I would agree is one more of access and egress, particularly for deliveries, because deliveries is a daily regular occurrence on that commercial property. I think we need to be particularly sensitive to that type of thing. The parking ratios on a commercial property, I don't see being that far out of line. In general, I always encourage property owners to add more parking, not less. So if they're going to, you know, they don't need to be that minimum. The issue that I have on the residential side is much stronger, but I think it's, for me, it's much more what I see as a fundamental change in the way that developers are building, you know, residential neighborhoods. You know, the standard where you have a, and I don't know what the standard street width is, you know, you have this 30-foot wide street, 6,000-7,000 square foot lot, where you have, you know, parking on both sides of the street and adequate parking, you know, in front of someone's, you know, garage. That type of typical lot size and house size is going by the wayside. And what we're seeing is much, much more typical are narrower streets where there's no or limited street parking. You know, the one over here on Cortland, there's like 3 feet from the front of the garage to the street, and so there's literally zero parking other than the guest parking or the, you know, the surplus parking. if people are not parking inside their garages. That's becoming much more the standard rather than the exception. And so my concern along that line is that, you know, owner vehicles, owner other, you know, trailers and boats and RVs and other things of that nature, their, you know, personal, you know, vehicles and additional vehicles, supplemental vehicles and visitor vehicles and service vehicles, whether it's, you know, a plumber coming to make a repair or, you know, visitors or something like that. Access to parking and access onto those things is becoming problematic. You know, in the neighborhood that I live in, it's not a problem, but my neighborhood's 50 years old, but they're not building near enough of those neighborhoods. So my concern is, yeah, it's in compliance. You know, we've got this 1,600 square foot, and they've got two parking spaces inside a garage. And, you know, when their son comes to visit from college, he gets to park eight lots away in the visitor parking. And but to me, it's much more of a functional change rather than a specific change.
Thank you. I think that will help us kind of hone the discussion. And we'll certainly probably bring back you know, some ideas and alternatives to pursue that. And as regards the issue with incompatibility with the massing of a project, I certainly can hear your concern and share it. It probably is something we could have fleshed out a little bit in advance of this hearing this evening. Neighborhood compatibility, I probably heard several times on both projects this evening, and we certainly can flesh out that discussion on various projects before coming to the commission. And so I thank you for those comments.
But to stand in defense of staff a little bit, if I might, and not that you're going to argue that, but part of our the reasoning for us to sit as a commission is that an applicant is able to come and say, I have a project and there are exceptions to the standard, and you as a staff might say, hypothetically will say, you're so far out of, you know, from that standard, it's unlikely that you're going to be successful in front of the Planning Commission. You're not in a situation to guarantee approval or denial, but I'm assuming you certainly have the opportunity, and I hope you take the opportunity to remind those applicants that, you know, you have a project and you're looking for the exception A or exception B or an exception C, and you may have greater or lesser success in making that kind of appeal or making that kind of proposal and walking away successfully. So certainly, you know, from time to time, and without getting into the specifics of the projects that we saw tonight, the proposals that we saw tonight, I'm hoping you do express your opinions or observations as saying, hey, because you're not in compliance, it does have to go in front of the Planning Commission. Don't expect that you're going to see that approval. So I'm assuming the Staff Advisory Council, I'm hoping, is making similar kind of comments to those applicants saying, hey, it's an interesting project. You may, you know, be prepared for denial because the scope of this, you know, the scale of this building is too great, or the parking in this project is not going to be adequate, or, you know, whatever the other kind of observations are. But give them the opportunity to come here and have their, you know, their voices, you know, made and plead their case.
Okay, so we'll move on to staff communications.
Two for you this evening. One is a clarification from, I believe it was the last meeting. The commission requested that they receive the ARC packets, and you should be receiving those via email, and I wanted to clarify that you are, and if you are, perhaps the request is that you receive the full plan sets in advance. Just wanted to clarify that so we can better
I believe that was a request by Commissioner Fowler Payne. Mm-hmm. We do receive them electronically, and that's enough for me. So maybe she might want a physical one. I can't speak for her. She's not here.
Okay, thank you. And the final item is upcoming work effort on the East Branch Streetscape Phase 2 project. We're getting ready to kick that off. We would like to utilize a stakeholders group similar to the one we have assembled for the Bridge Street Bridge project. And so the next Planning Commission meeting, I'll be fishing for a volunteer from this commission.
Okay. So I move that we adjourn the meeting.
Second. So third.
We are adjourned.